on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where the idea is always to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so current and future generations of their families and ours will know and won't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. Well, we learn a lot. I know I do. I learn something new every week. So you could say we're educated, we're certainly entertained, and many times we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It's not too often that a veteran story gets spread across two episodes of Hometown Heroes, but that's the case this time with 93-year-old Augie Palercio of Fresno, California. If you check out his photo gallery on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll see what an SBD Dauntless dive bomber looks like and how Augie would have experienced his 43 missions as a rear-facing gunner in those SBDs. He would eventually fly those planes, too, as well as the F-4U Corsair. His hearing isn't what it used to be, and sometimes his memory gets a little fuzzy, but he didn't hesitate when I asked him this question. How did it feel in a dive bomber in that gunner seat, diving straight down where you can't see where you're going? Did you like being the pilot better?
Oh, much better, much. When you're there and you know when you have to be real careful about enemy planes. Yeah. Well, if you're in a dive practically straight down, if an enemy plane is trying to stay with you, it's just about impossible. I say that because in practice, we used to practice that. The leader would roll over, pull down, and the wingman couldn't stay with him. Going down like that, the gunner is, in most cases, if he's using the seat belt, he's strapped in. But sometimes the gunner won't use a seat belt because this garter belt that he wears, you know, it's a belt like this here, then it has two legs. The two legs are clamped to the side of the airplane, and you can stand up, move around, but you can't take any G's slowing down. Standing up, you're out. If you better do something besides standing there.
What was the carrier that you flew off of? Was it the same carrier the whole time or more than one?
One was a Ranger and one was a Wright. And as a dumb old man, I keep getting them mixed up in my head. And they're both at the bottom of the ocean. Now, when I say carriers, they're not like the carriers we have today. Today, they're three football field lengths. Yeah. The one I was on was 700 feet. Uh-huh. And in that 700 feet, all you had to work with was half of that because the other half had airplanes getting stacked on it ready to go. Right. And the thing is, when you land, you better grab the first or second hook. Otherwise, you're going to run into the barrier. And the barrier, what the barrier is, it has sometimes three and sometimes four cables stretched across the deck. Right. So if you miss the hook and your brakes never could stop you, yeah, you're going to get wrapped up. And the dangerous part is when a plane hits that barrier, about 100 sailors come out and throw the airplane over the side because they might have four or five more planes wanting to come in out of fuel. And you could sacrifice one to save six, maybe. So that's why they would always say, tell us, you pilots are expendable. Bring the airplanes back.
That's reassuring, isn't it?
At the time, it was just a joke.
Most of us have never flown a Corsair. What did that feel like? What did you like about the F4U?
Oh, it was a mean airplane. It was when I say mean, you do what you wanted to do. Lots of people didn't like the course there. One time we were on duty at El Toro, as well, it was still a base, and we're night flying. And some reason or other, they put this major on my wing, and that's a no-no. Rank leads. You don't care whether it's good or bad, rank leads. Yeah. Well, he wouldn't take the lead. He just signaled no, so nothing I could do. So we landed, and he came over, and there again, I was an enlisted man,
right.
And we got to talking, and I was afraid that he was going to really do something to make me quit flying or something. So I couldn't handle that. But then after our chit-chat, he said, "Plercio, what do you think of that airplane?" Right away, I knew what was his problem. I said, "Well, I think it's the best I was in. The only thing that was better, and all I've had was one flight, and it was the F-8 Bearcat. It never did see service, but it was a real airplane." And I finally said, "Well, Major, if I may, why do you ask me that? You had a problem. You'd held position real good while we were up there. It must have been a training flight for him. And you were holding position real good. Every time I gave a signal, you responded. Plercio, it doesn't have enough engines. Just that simple. A multi-engine pilot can't handle a single engine."
Yeah.
Well, as a civilian, I owned a, still have it. I gave it to my son, a twin-engine Cessna 310 turbocharged. And I liked it very well, because I always liked an ace in a hole.
Yeah.
And that second engine was the ace in my hole.
You never had that luxury in the war. You mentioned being a test pilot or doing some test flights. Were there some other airplanes that you had to test out?
One of the tours, the duties, I was stationed at El Toro, and there was another Corsair squadron there that mostly new pilots. And you always need a test pilot. When a pilot writes on the yellow sheet that oil pressure fluctuating or temperature gets too high, after you fix it, you got to test it. That's where the test pilot comes in. You got extra pay for that, because that test flight could be your death.
Extra pay for extra guts.
That's right.
Well, and never were guts and faith required more than the time Augie was shot down and had to be pulled out of the water. We heard about it last time, but maybe you missed that. And if so, you're going to need the context for other things we're going to discuss in a bit. So here is part of that account from Augie's days as a dive bomber pilot.
And of course, I had a gunner in the back seat. And you know, that poor boy was, I don't think he was 17 years old. Evidently, he stopped in any aircraft shell with his chest. And of course, it blew the plane out of control. So we landed it in the water. As I was trying to get him out of the cockpit, the back seat, he had his gunner's belt on. And I don't know if you know what a gunner's belt is, but it's like a garter belt that girls wear to hold their stockings up, I think. And I had trouble trying to get him out, and while I was doing that, I could see his chest was wide open. It was, he was dead, shot dead center. The shell must have went off right in back of him. Of course, he was facing the rear. And so we got in the water. I tried to get him out, and the plane was going down, I think about 10 feet, I run out of air. I come up for air, and I went back down. I couldn't find it. I lost it. So I lost him, and I spent, they tell me, about 4 hours. The last couple of hours, probably, I wasn't all myself. It's hard to find anybody or anything that's down in the water with the white caps. They all look the same, no matter what you do. I was about ready to give up. I'd been in there for I don't know how long, 2 hours, 3 hours. I was wearing my way west, but like everything else, I guess, the more you think about it, the more you think the Mae West is going south. That means the air is coming out of it, so I decided to make ones out of my pants. They taught us in training how to take your pants off and tie the legs together and then shake it in the air and slam it in the water, and that traps a bunch of air in there, and that's another life jacket. Well, like a dumb kid, I had it all ready to slap it in the air, and I thought, well, golly, if some shark comes along and sees that little worm there, I'd be a goner. So I put my pants back on. And about the time for me to just give up and quit because couldn't see any use. Then I saw a speck in the sky. It was a PBY Navy patrol plane. And evidently, not the pilot, somebody, some of the mechanics inside the airplane spotted me. And they told the pilot about it, and so he started to circle me, but I could tell he wasn't seeing me because he wasn't passing any signals on to me or anybody. Finally, he evidently saw me, and to acknowledge the fact that he saw me, he rocked his wings real hard. Sure enough, he got in the wind, he landed it. That's some of the stuff they told me after I come to. He landed into the wind, but I do remember two sailors diving overboard. Even before PBY ever stopped, and pretty soon something was grabbing me.
They pulled him out of the water, still wearing a jacket that he says he never took off during his flying days. He still has it. You can find photos of it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll talk about it when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.